Good afternoon. I'm Tanya Grove, Chair of the Employee Assembly, and on behalf of my colleagues on the Assembly and Alan Mittman, our staff elected trustee, I'd like to welcome President Skorton, Vice President of Human Resources and Safety Services, Mary Opperman, and all staff colleagues to Valley Hall. The order of our events for today are our annual award presentation, followed by the President's address, a Q&A session, and finally lunch. Before presenting the Employee Appreciation Award, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge Beth McKinney, who unfortunately could not be here with us today. Beth served as our employee elected trustee from 2008 to 2012 and was an advocate for staff. On behalf of the EA and all of our staff colleagues, I'd like to thank her for her hard work as a member of the Board of Trustees. The Employee Assembly Appreciation Award is presented each year to a Cornell staff member or group in recognition of their outstanding contributions and continuing service to the university community. Last year, the Business and Administrative Services Centers received the award for their hard work during the rollout of the Qualy system. Today, we thank a group of staff whose work we see daily but often take for granted. They take care of our campus, mowing over 300 acres of lawns, cultivating flower beds, shrubs, trees, snow removal from 15 miles of roads, 61 miles of walkways, and 114 acres of parking lots. They support campus events like commencement, slope day, homecoming, and athletic events. This is a small sample of the work they do to maintain Cornell's world-renowned beauty. Please join me in welcoming Maria Simaluka, Senior Director of Facilities Management, up to the podium to accept the Employee Assembly Appreciation Award on behalf of the grounds team. I'd also like to ask any staff member who works in this unit who's here with us today to stand up so we can applaud you.
I want to say thank you to the grounds team. When they reached out to me to ask to receive the award on their behalf, I can only say that it was an honor. This is a group of people and individuals that work truly hard all day, all through the entire year. So again, thank you so much.
For those of you who are here today, I hope that you can share our appreciation with your colleagues who couldn't join us. And now I'd like to invite President Skorton to the podium for his address. And there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of his remarks. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tanya. And I want to add my personal congratulations to the grounds team, whose work I see every day. And I didn't know about those figures of 61 miles of walkways and all that. It's amazing. Congratulations to you. And also to Beth in absentia for her good work on the Board of Trustees as an employee elected trustee. Not only did she do a really excellent job representing your interests, but took that big overriding view of what's good for the whole Cornell family. And so I'll have a chance to thank her at some point again, and I hope you do as well. So, I've said it before to many of you in groups in this talk before and as individuals, that it's worth repeating very, very often. You are a very critical component of why this university is considered nationally and internationally such an excellent institution. And I want to say that again and often. Now, whether we're thinking about the faculty quality, the work that you bring to the table, the students who we have here, any way you slice it, Cornell University continues to be increasingly recognized as one of the world's best universities. According to a recent numerical, not reputational, assessment, Cornell had more academic fields ranked in the top 10 than any American university, which is amazing. Our new first-year students, the class of 2016, and many of you have had a chance to get to know, were selected from the largest pool of applicants in the history of Cornell and the largest pool of applicants in the Ivy League, and they're already contributing their particular angle to the vitality and the nature of Cornell University. And after three very, very difficult years, we will end this fiscal year, the fourth year in this process of recovering from the worst of the recession. We will end this year with a balanced consolidated operating budget. That budget was out of balance to the tune of about $150 million out of a non-restricted budget of about $1.3 billion, so about 12% out of whack. And at the end of this year, we'll be back in balance on our consolidated operating budget. And each one of you and each person that you're representing in your units and teams was very much responsible for getting us to that place. So we have an ongoing commitment, all of us, I do, and the other leaders of the university, and I know that you do, to make Cornell a good place for people to work from all walks of life and in all kinds of jobs and responsibilities on the campus. And again, this year, we've been recognized on a variety of best workplace lists. But these have been tough 3 to 4 years, and this semester has started in a way that I, and I know you, didn't think and didn't hope it would start. As I mentioned in my email message to the campus just a few days ago last week, the recent incidents of bias and violence have left many of us, I have definitely been left feeling angry and anxious and vulnerable. And I want to thank those of you who have been involved in helping us to address this set of issues for everything that you've done so far, for everything that you're doing right now, and for the things that you'll continue to do as we go forward, especially the CU Police Department and Chief's Owner, the staff at Gannett Health Services, the Dean of Students' Office, and many others in both safety services and in the Division of Student and Academic Services. And the recent open community meetings that we have had, some brought together by those in Human Resources and Safety Services, some brought together by those in Student and Academic Services, and others, are really helping me and the rest of the leadership to reassess policies and procedures going forward and to consider other actions that we can all take as a community to make this place that we love so much and call our workplace safer and with a better climate for all of us. We also have underway this year, as I know that virtually everybody here knows, a major institutional diversity planning project that goes across the entire university from Ithaca to Geneva, New York, to Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. And it's a project called Toward New Destinations. It includes all of the campuses of Cornell. Now, diversity is something we talk about a lot as a university and nationally. And it's increasingly clear by research that a more diverse workforce, a more diverse student body, leads to a more excellent result in terms of the campus and what it represents. And this project, the Toward New Destinations project, sets diversity goals to which the university leaders are held accountable. There are sort of two big models of doing this. One model is to have a czar of diversity on the campus, a chief diversity officer. And we have decided, with a lot of guidance from a lot of people who are very knowledgeable across the campus and outside the campus, we've decided to do it differently so that all the leaders on the campus are responsible for some aspects of this Toward New Destinations. I am accountable to the Board of Trustees. The two provosts, Ken Fox here in Ithaca and Dr. Lori Glimsher at Weill Cornell Medical College, are accountable to me. And then the different department heads at Weill are accountable to the dean in New York City, and the different deans here are accountable to the provost, and the vice president's accountable to me. So this is something much, much different, because each college and university administrative unit, vice presidential unit, has put in place already five measurable initiatives, five measurable goals for the coming year, and that these units will be advancing to improve diversity and the climate of the organization in general. And about 30%, a little more than 30%, let's say a third of these initiatives relate to staff. Provost Fox and Dean of Faculty Joe Burns and I, along with the office staff in 300 Day Hall and the units that are associated with our office, the Ombudsman, JA, Commencement Office, and several others, participated in a respected Cornell training program. This was facilitated by Alan Mittman, who's Director of Workforce Policy and Labor Relations, and employee elected trustee, and EEO Specialist Laurel Parker. I thought the training leading up to this and the session were excellent, really superb. I got things, I've been doing this for a long time, but I learned things on the online training. Took me an hour and 10 minutes to do it. I learned things from that. And even after doing that, I learned things at the session yesterday with Alan and Laurel, not only from what they said, but from their responses to questions around the room. So I hope many of you will have an opportunity to participate this year in similar forums at the unit level with leaders in that area. You can learn more about Toward New Destinations and find ways to participate by linking to it, and it's right on the Cornell homepage, Tommy, as far as I know, right on the front page. And I hope you'll have a chance to do that. It's well worth it. Now, going forward and getting back to the difficult start that we had to this semester, obviously each of us has to reaffirm that violence and bias just have no place on our campus. I'd like to say in a larger sense that they have no place in our society, and I believe that, but definitely they have no place on our campus. And how we treat each other, how we think about ourselves, and the prudent measures that I hope we will all take for safety and for individual respect, each for the other, are very, very important. And I ask again, as I did in the message, for your continuing commitment to work with me directly and with the leaders of the university to make this campus safe and secure for everyone. I recognize, of course, that other concerns beyond the terrible incidents of bias and violence that we've experienced, other concerns can also have a huge impact on how you feel about your job and how others in your local area feel about their jobs. And we have asked a lot of you in the past few years in every way. Last fall, the fall of 2011, in response to a resolution from the Employee Assembly calling for a study to better understand staff engagement with the university, as you know, we initiated the Cornell Employee Survey. We had an astonishing 70% response rate. And those of you, and I know many of you do in a professional capacity, work in settings in which you do a survey of some kind, will recognize what an amazing response rate that is. And of the 70% of staff who responded, 80% were satisfied or very satisfied with working at Cornell. So that's a very gratifying result to know that despite all the stuff that we've been through together as a family, that 80% of you think that this is a good place to continue to work. But we also heard you tell us, and I heard you loud and clear, say that we have issues that need to be dealt with. I know you're concerned about the amount of work you have. I know you're concerned about the amount of change you have faced and are facing now with new systems and new tasks and new expectations. You shared with us that you're worried about job security. You shared with us that you're worried about job advancement, and you were honest and courageous to say that in some ways, in some settings, you were disappointed with the senior leadership of the university. And I applaud you for having the plain old guts to do that. Not all of these issues are going to be easy to address, and even those that can be addressed are not going to be addressed overnight, but we are making progress toward both short-term goals and long-term goals that we all share as members of the Cornell family. And I am personally committed to you, I'm telling you this today, to work toward a time where we are all going to be even more enthusiastic about working at Cornell. Now, based on the survey results specifically, we identified four university-wide issues that are a particular concern to those who answer the survey, and obviously by extrapolation to all of our staff colleagues. Career and professional growth, workload and workload imbalances, opportunities for staff to be recognized for excellence, and developing and implementing feedback to the supervisors, supervisory feedback mechanisms. The Division of Human Resources, working closely with the Employee Assembly, created an oversight committee and then four subcommittees of this oversight committee that are staffed by employees from throughout the university that began to address these issues over the summer. And I wonder if those of you who are on the committee or the four subcommittees could just for a moment raise your hand and be recognized for the work that you have done. I want to thank you for what you've done. So all of this work and what happened to the subcommittee's recommendations? They were recently sent to Vice President Opperman, and she is seeking feedback from her colleagues actively and expeditiously. And once that is done, I look forward to discussing them with her, to learning from her and from you about your recommendations, and then making final decision on actions. My goal is to get this done yet this calendar year. In the meantime, I invite you to share feedback or ideas with these subcommittees. Now, when we wrote this up, we have a little link here on the paper where if you were reading this paper online, you could click on this link. But I just realized this morning as I was coming over here that you can't do that because I'm just reading them to you. So I'm going to tell you the URL. You will not remember it. And maybe we can put that out somehow through the EA and maybe Tommy, if through your good offices, if we could put it out. Anyway, for those of you who have better memories than I do, it's www.hr.cornell.edu/about/employee survey, all one word. I know, Tommy and I will put it up somewhere that you can get that. Now, speaking broadly, I want to go through quickly so we have plenty of time for your questions and comments. Some of the initiatives that have been proposed by the subcommittees. And you may want to weigh in on these through that website or a little bit today if you feel that's appropriate. First, let's start with the first area of concern, opportunities for career growth and development. We heard from many of you that you obviously are looking for career growth opportunities and to feel that you're moving forward in your career. And you shared with me the last time we had an open forum that you're concerned that the spans and layers compression that was done as part of the effort to balance the budget has reduced career opportunities because it's left fewer layers to grow between. And the committee working with the HR professionals is exploring the type of career ladders that do allow professional development whether or not you're managing other people. You're all managing work, and whether you're managing work and also managing people, HR is working on career ladders that will recognize that. This new way of thinking about career movement is aimed to help you grow in your career without necessarily having to manage others, or to let you move between the two tracks, managing work and managing others, depending on the position and skill you wish to develop in helping to move up your career. You will soon be able, for example, to take advantage of a resume editing program and a mentoring program. The resume program will help you to build your resume, to draft cover letters for the resume, to give you tips for interviews, all aimed to help equip you with the tools that will help you be hired into other internal positions within the university. And the mentoring program will connect you with people across the campus who can help grow and develop your career. There's nothing like networking to make this happen. Another subcommittee in the same area is proposing recommendations on workload and workload imbalance, the second of the issues. One theme we heard with regard to workload concerned inefficient processes and procedures. Some of you brought this up last year when we were together and at many casual conversations I've had with many of you. The subcommittee in this area has been exploring how to create a culture at Cornell that allows you to reflect on the work you're doing and to pose questions about why am I doing this work and is it critical to do this work. To be able to pose questions like this without being afraid of anything, and also to get beyond the answer that sometimes we give each other, well, that's how we've always done it at Cornell. A great example of this kind of culture change comes from our colleagues at University Communications. VP Bruce charged his staff with figuring out tasks that no longer needed to be done or that could be changed in some fashion. And one of the changes that came out of this thinking was to discontinue the print on-demand version of the Cornell Chronicle. And with a big, big audience outside of the campus, obviously, it made sense to have an online-only newspaper. And this not only made it a more efficient way to serve the whole Cornell family, inside and outside, but gave back some precious time to his staff. So thank you, Tommy, for your leadership in that regard. The subcommittee is developing a process for HR and supervisors to respond to staff requests for position classification or workload balance reviews. But obviously, this is going to take time, and we need to work together to examine what we do and how we get that work done so that we can begin to address the issues of work stress that have to be evident in an organization that has fewer people, but if anything, more work being done. Vice President Opperman and her human resource colleagues are working on a training that will help us manage our personal and work energy. Many of you have begun, along with me, to learn a little bit more about this very important way of looking at our work life. They're also working to develop creative and flexible ways for staff to better manage their own well-being and exploring ways for wellness activities to happen in more locations across the university. The third concern of the four, giving staff the opportunity to provide feedback to supervisors, has components that can be put in place now and also work things to work on over the longer term. Long term, obviously, it's about changing the culture to make each of us in leadership positions less defensive and more willing to hear, absorb, and be responsive to feedback. Short term, it's about finding a way, very simply and very directly, for individual staff members to have a constructive dialogue with each of them with a supervisor. And of course, we'll keep you informed about work in this area as it progresses. We do need to get in the habit of acknowledging each other and supporting each other. And another subcommittee is working on this fourth area, which is recognizing staff for their excellent work. And I'm so pleased that Tanya recognized the grounds team today and that we have this tradition of the EA recognizing a work group and giving this EA appreciation award. It's very, very important, and I applaud you for doing it. And going forward, we're going to create some new opportunities for staff to nominate each other, for you to nominate each other for the good work that you do every day. There's going to be three new awards given annually besides the EA Appreciation Award. One for individual excellence, one for management excellence, and a new diversity award given either to an individual or a group of people, a unit. Nominees for all three of these will also be considered for an overall President's Award, which we're going to call Far Above Cayuga's Waters, sort of a catchy idea, very original. And there'll also be an award for leaders at all levels who live the university values and demonstrate either skills for success or leadership skills for success in furthering the mission. And soon you'll be able to also acknowledge your colleagues through an update of the Employee Assembly Kudos Program that I'm aware of. It's a really nice program. And the kudos giver, the person giving the kudos, the thanks, and the receiver are invited to an employee assembly celebration at the end of the year and announced in the next EA News. The criteria and the online nomination forms will be announced very shortly. Now, these awards are terrific and I think are very, very important to do, both for those who receive it and for all of us to understand that we recognize and thank each other. Obviously, they do not completely address the underlying issue that we heard clearly on the employee survey, and that was the need for the university to recognize more fully and more concretely the contributions of staff, and I hear you about that. But they are part of a culture of appreciation, and I think that they will help us to stop in our wildly busy existences and have a chance to thank and appreciate one another and also highlight our achievements. Now, one concrete way that the deans and the vice presidents, the provost and I would like to acknowledge your hard work this year is to extend the winter break this year by one extra day. We know for some of you, you are in units who work 24/7. And for some of you, this is actually the busiest time of the year. It's not a break time. So it may not be possible for each of you to take an extra day off. But for others, we hope you'll be able to use this additional day, which is going to be December 24, to be with those that are important to you. Yep. Thank you. There are other people to be thanked for this, but they don't want me to mention their names because they're tired of me bringing up their names to be thanked, so I'm not going to mention their names because that way I won't get in trouble. I'm not going to tell you who the people are because it might upset their families, the Oppermans, so I'm just not going to say it. Okay. Anyway, as the subcommittee, the four subcommittees that I mentioned, work with Vice President Opperman and her staff to finalize the recommendations for my review and for action, I hope you will continue to look on the employee survey website and continue to contribute your perspectives. The announcement of these changes is not the end of input from the staff. It's just one more milestone along the way of working together. That work is never going to end. We have to keep on doing this continuously, as the cliche goes, to make this a better place to work. Together, I know we can extend Cornell's successes, including progressive policies that encourage professional growth, enable constructive dialogue with supervisors, including about what work is important and how we get that work done, and recognize and reward excellence throughout the university. I thank you for everything you do, and we got plenty of time for questions. Thanks. So, Tanya, we have till what time? Till 1 o'clock. So we have like 22 minutes and 40 seconds that we can interact as colleagues. So I got my paper to write down. I'm all set to go. Questions? We have microphones in these two aisles. And I guess there's actually nobody upstairs today. Is that right? Yeah. So we have them in these aisles here. Or if you want to be that way, you can just raise your hand and yell. Am I missing it? I'm sorry, the light's right in my eyes. I'm not used to being on stage. Anybody, is there a hand up there? Yeah, please. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Melanie Claire Malice, and I work at the Cornell Nanoscale Facility. And I don't know, this is the first time I've attended one of these live, so I don't know the culture of it. But when you said that this was the first year we were going to have a balanced budget, I just wanted to stand up and clap. No one else did, so I was like, okay, I'll be good.
Yeah. Thank you.
But I think a balanced budget deserves a day-long applause.
Thank you. Now, you know, nobody ever likes to hear the leaders say, gosh, I know how much of a sacrifice you all made for this, but I do know how much of a sacrifice you have made. Positions that are not open anymore, people who are not here anymore, and you are doing all the work that remains, so I applaud each of you. It was a big team effort, and it was a rough period of time, but I'm very proud of the fact that a lot of it through staff leadership, we got to where we are. It's going to take continued discipline, but thank you. And with behavior like that, I hope you come to all of my talks. That would really be great. That would be great. And maybe you can leave some of my vice presidents out, and then you could come instead. Okay, there must be questions or comments. Please don't be bashful. And by the way, I always like to remind you that I give everybody my private email, and if you have things you want to bring up that you just don't feel comfortable doing in a big crowd like this, just write me, david.scorton@cornell.edu. And the only thing I always remind people is let me know if I can share what you write me, because I very frequently want to get help and advice and guidance from my colleagues. But let me know whether I can share it or not. And if you don't want me to share it, I won't share it. But please don't be bashful to write me. Yes, please.
Hi, President Gordon. I'm Masami Ricketts. I'm the Director of Diversity at Johnson Graduate School and Management here at Cornell. So my question is about towards as the person who's tasked with leading this from my unit. There's been a lot of discussion about the importance of diversity and the need for more inclusion on this campus, but my question is really in regards to additional resources for the people leading these initiatives at the units to make these changes we're trying to make through this new initiative, and also the accountability for leaders. Like, how are the leaders of each of the units going to be held accountable for results but towards the destination?
Yeah, thank you. These are two really important questions. The harder one of the two we should tackle first. Whoops. Is it on? Okay, great. The harder of the two, for sure, is the resources. There have been a few new positions sort of in the center of the university created that I imagine you're aware of. Five individuals I refer to as professionals who are doing different things in that regard. Lynette Chappelle-Williams, Renee Alexander, Sherry Natero, A.T. Miller, and who am I forgetting?
Yael
Levitt. And so those five, the provost and I meet with periodically and so on. The real work obviously is going to happen in the units, and honestly the deans and vice presidents are just getting their heads around how to do that. We had a retreat, I'd like to say in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, to review this, and just beginning to talk about those issues. So I don't have a straightforward answer for you on that one. Except to say that it's a recognized, very important problem. One of the things that will come in regards to resources and trying to make the most out of whatever resources we have, one of the things that's coming out of that retreat is a sort of a big matrix of the individual initiatives, like say the Johnson School has compared to another college, compared to a vice presidential unit, and seeing if there are ways to share and collaborate work that's common to make things go farther, but it doesn't directly answer the question that you're raising. The other question about accountabilities, here's how it's gonna work roughly, and I have to say honestly roughly because we're just doing it for the first time. Each of the units has its five initiatives, and these initiatives, by the way, for those who haven't had a chance to drill down on this, go beyond compositional diversity. In other words, go beyond the composition of the unit, which everybody has that responsibility as an accountability. They have other initiatives that go to the climate of the unit that has to do with retention. And as you know, the big challenge in all of our lives, in diversity and every other dimension, is retaining people in the family, in the community. So so the unit director has, A, B, C, D, E. And the supervisor above, so in the case of the deans, the provost, in the case of the department heads at the medical school, the dean, in the case of the provosts and vice presidents, me, and in my case, the board of trustees, those initiatives will become part of the PD, the performance dialogue for that person. Now, you might ask, and I'm sure you're thinking, so what? So what if the person misses on those? And we're still working through that with professional advice and guidance from Vice President Opperman and others to see what it will mean. What are the sort of things that could affect a response to accountabilities? You could change someone's salary. You understand the very narrow range of SIP, of the salary improvement program that we've had recently, which doesn't allow a lot of flexibility to do that. There could be other things, positive recognition, other things, resources to the unit to continue and even expand areas. And we're working through that the first time. We haven't yet had even one round of these performance dialogues because we just got everybody approved. One thing that was very hopeful to me, that group of professionals that I mentioned and a few others, Vice President Murphy, Vice President Opperman, looked at the initiatives put forward as a proposal from every vice president and dean, and in some cases sent them back for them to be worked on. They right away came back, and every single one has now sort of passed muster, with that group. And so I'm happy that we have the accountabilities, that we have a method for following them up, which is the PD of the leader, and now we'll see what happens. Maybe you could keep in touch with me by email, if you don't mind, when a little bit of time has gone by, and tell me how you think it's going. That would be great.
I did just want to say one thing to your point about resources. Just to clarify, so of those five positions, those are all either the work is either added to those positions or those are positions that were reallocated as well. So I actually share your concern. And in the area of accountability, I'm starting to wonder if one of the carrots in the carrot and stick of accountability isn't the issue of resources. Because in most cases, leaders here aren't as motivated by personal gain as they are in corporate, but they are motivated by program gain. And so we're in the early stages of this, but we're starting to talk about the opportunity to see advances to the programs that you're leading as a possible character.
Thank you, Vice President Opperman. And I think that you'll all agree that I didn't thank her in general. I thanked her for helping answer that question. That's good. Questions? Comments? Yeah, please.
My name is Martha Fisher, and I'm basically a technician out of the ornithology lab. And I guess this relates to the issue of workload, and that the director of my department is the director of my department, and he's also a faculty position. Mm-hmm. So it's like he's got two jobs. Mm-hmm. And then on top of him, the director of the lab is a faculty position. And from down in my trench job, there's a trickle-down effect of their workloads. And I guess I wanted to be a little squeaky wheel and letting those who have heard from that person that I've got too much to do, that trickles down to the rest of us. And I guess specifically, the director of my Macaulay Library, what sorts of things are helping him manage us and also manage his faculty responsibilities?
So thank you. Let me just repeat that question for everybody real quick and tell me if I get it right. Paraphrase it, but the question that was raised had to go to that one of the four subcommittees that's working on the balance between hands on deck and the ability to get the work done. And the specific nuance that our colleague raised is that if the leaders of a unit themselves are pressed to do two jobs or more than one job, there's a trickle-down effect into the colleagues who work within that unit that also presses them. And that's a very eloquent way that you stated of what the problem is that went to the subcommittee. I don't have a glib answer for you on this. We have, if anything, a few more students than we had before the recession hit, a handful more. If anything, we have just as much research as we were doing before. If anything, units like the Lab of O that bring some of their own funding in through philanthropy and so on are reaching out ever broader in the world and doing things that I couldn't even imagine them doing even 5 years ago. And so the number of hands on deck has gone like this. The workload is like this or like this, depending on the unit. So that's the whole point of looking at that imbalance. The beginning ideas that you heard about in the remarks that I made earlier is what we're doing so far. But the idea of giving feedback that was in those remarks about, asking, just in a constructive way, why are we doing this? Is it important to do it? Why are we doing it this way? Is one very important approach. And now, of course, in a particular thing that you're raising, within your unit, that's not exactly what you're asking about, because within the unit, you figure that the unit's already been told, please work on this, and that's trickling down. But I do encourage you within the unit to talk to your supervisor and your colleagues about ways that you can locally think about what are we doing that maybe we don't have to do to achieve that mission, or what might we be doing differently. One thing I guarantee you is that bureaucrats at my level are not going to know anything about what you're doing compared to what you know. So we're going to depend on you to help us do that. The second is one of the other subcommittees was that you have to feel like it'll be a worthwhile endeavor to have that conversation. Not only will it be appreciated and welcome, but will people actually act on it? And you do your part, please. We're doing our part to talk to the leadership of the university and make everyone understand as much as possible this massive change that we're going through on campus. So I hear you loud and clear. These little things that we're doing for starters is a start in that direction. And once again, if you talk to your colleagues within the Lab of O and the particular part that you work in, and you have some ideas for me that I can share, it would be great if I could, send them to me and say that this is what came out of the conversation. Because even though your you know, local situation is your local situation, there's a lot of general principles that I think can be spread around, good practices around the campus, by me and my colleagues, of course, being able to hear directly from you. So I thank you for raising a question. I hope you'll keep in touch with me. That would be great. You're having some sort of a auction or some contest about elephants or something related to the Lab of O, some sketch deal. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They got me to do a sketch. And I handed it in today. I'm going to be 63 next month. This looks like a six-year-old did it. So maybe when you see it, just figure that somebody I met in the neighborhood did it, a kid did it. So hope it raises some money for you anyway. Questions? Please. Comments? Yeah, way in the back there. Yell real loud, will you? That's good.
David Federer, Landscape Architect and Campus Planning Office. I wanted to first share kind of a success story for the university and then maybe issue a challenge to kind of follow up on that. A little background first of all. So for a number of years, for the development of all our major buildings now, we've been following the LEED standards in order to certain kind of the performance towards their sustainability.
Right.
That's great for the buildings, but we have a lot of other areas and office buildings, a lot of landscape on campus that can also contribute to sustainability. Well, it so happens that a number of faculty, students, and myself here on the campus have been working towards a similar set of guidelines like the LEED that we do for buildings that would apply to landscapes as well.
Oh, okay.
And I'm proud to announce that, and you may have heard that recently one of our sites in front of Mann Library, a garden that was designed with the help of a number actually was one of the first 11 sites, which is the new name of this certification program, pilot projects that was certified across the country, one of 11. I think for one thing,
very good. Great.
Great success. A way our university is helping to contribute to the development of sustainable sites throughout the country. The challenge I would like to issue is, that's great, we've done it as a pilot. This is now coming online as something that can be applied to any new landscape. I would challenge that, just like we say our major buildings ought to meet a certain LEED standard, I think our landscape should also meet a site standard as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's terrific. Is that, before I comment on it and congratulate you again, is that the same, some of the students and staff and maybe one faculty that were involved in a project at the president's residence like a year and a half ago, just a planning exercise? Is that the same group?
Partially, yes.
Okay. Because I got a chance to meet a couple of the people. It's very, very impressive. This was, if I recall correctly, please correct me if I get this wrong. It was an idea to do a plan for something, even though we didn't know whether we'd have the resources to actually do it, but a plan in some of the areas that people can enjoy at the President's House when they're over for events. So that was really terrific. I had no idea about the certification standards for landscape things like LEED. For those who haven't bumped into the LEED, L-E-E-D is an acronym. I can never remember what it stands for, but it basically has to do with some aspects of sustainability of a building, how much the way the building is put together affects the amount of energy it uses, and therefore how much of a change in the carbon footprint it produces. And they have a various levels of patting you on the back when the thing does better, all the way up to platinum, I think, is a top one, if I'm not mistaken. And I think we have the Nevin Center at Plantations is maybe a gold. Gold, and I think Weill Hall is a gold.
Human Ecology
is a platinum, right? And I think there's one other one. I can't. What is? Okay. And so I was aware of that. I was not aware of this. So I will talk to the facilities people and the people in architecture, art, and planning in CALS just so I can understand this better. If you could send me a little tiny email with just some sort of a link or something that I could look at to understand the process, that would be great, to david.scorton. And I'll forward that and share it and find out more about it and get back to you. That would be great. And your name is Cutter, right? Okay, thank you. That's super. Questions? I'm sorry to squint. It's hard to see out there. I'm actually getting new glasses on Friday. In case you didn't know this, an interesting little fact of biology. If you're real nearsighted and you get older, eventually your eyes get less nearsighted. You get more farsighted, which is why people my age are like this. Whenever they look at something, they go like this, you know? So I went to my eye doctor, and he said, you don't need quite a strong prescription. And I said, great. And he said, not so great. It's because of your age. So thank you for listening to that. I feel much better after sharing that. Questions? Comments? I thought I saw another hand out here before. Okay, great, great, sorry. How are you? Well, we just saw a PD go good today. That's good. So my opinion of the four things that we talked about, in a second I'm going to ask Vice President Opperman if she has any comments to make, but all four issues that the subcommittees are dealing with are very substantial issues. I think this one and the one having to do with workforce workload balance are really, really very, very challenging. And I know that we're working in this direction. We certainly have talked about it, you know, up at the level of the vice presidents and deans. But there's distance between that level and the levels that each person has to deal with. So Vice President Opperman will make some comments on this. Please.
I feel like I should sing.
Please don't do that.
So there's... I shouldn't turn my back to him. So I'm going to stand up here where at least if he mocks me, I am closer. So there's two pieces to this. One is the mechanism by which you give feedback. And we actually have mechanisms already in place that can be used fairly quickly. And we're hoping to roll those out soon. And some of us are already using them. They're fairly simple mechanisms where the questions go out around in sort of a loop, a circular feedback that takes in both your the people that report to you, your colleagues, and the people above you, and it can be collected and given to your supervisor's supervisor. So there's that's one piece of supervisory feedback, is a tool by which people can give their feedback. But the other is, and David spoke about this, is the culture of feedback. How we give it and how we take it. And so there's the very specific issue of a feedback mechanism once a year. And then there's the skills that we give during the leadership programs, Turning Point and the Harold D. Kraft Leadership Program and others, that help us all understand how to give feedback on a regular basis, and just as importantly, how to take feedback in. And it's really working on those feedback strategies, so we're all better at that throughout the year, that allow us to accept that much more formal feedback and also make that once a year or once every couple years formal feedback tool less of an issue. Because I'll just share with you, if that's the only time you're getting or giving feedback, it puts an awful lot of pressure on people. And so we're working on both. So we'll be rolling out the feedback tools, but we're also going to be encouraging more people to go through the programs that help us all to improve our skills in both giving feedback and then being able to accept it.
Mary, is the first mechanism you mentioned, the 360. We might just say that, correct me if I overstate this, I think now all the deans go through 360s and all the vice presidents are going through 360s. Yes. And so Mary's organized, for example, a 360 for me each year since I've been here. And it is a really terrific way of doing it. You get aggregate feedback from people, you know, who work with you in the unit, people who are colleagues, people who are in a supervisory position compared to you. So that's good. Thanks very much, Mary. I think we have time for one real quick question. Is it okay, Tanya? One real quick one. It's 1 o'clock, but we can take if there's another one. If it's a short one, it doesn't involve my vice president's answering, that'd be good.
Hi, I'm Christy Diamond. I'm also a lab of anthropology, and I wasn't planning on asking a question today, but your story about your eyeglasses brought it up.
Okay.
I'm fortunate that I don't wear eyeglasses, but many of my coworkers do. And I have to say that when I found out that eye care coverage wasn't provided with our health insurance, I was shocked about that. And especially for an institution of our size to not have that kind of coverage, I'm curious to know more about that. Was that something that we looked into and found that it wasn't available?
So vision support is in the, it is part of the in-person. So we have two sets of benefits. So it depends on whether you're on the state side or on the private side.
Right.
But on the private side, in First Ameris, there is support for eyeglass coverage.
So I'm on the state side.
I thought there was, and I'm sorry, I'm going to take your name and get back to you with that information.
Yeah, because I know on the endowed side it's there for sure. Because I. Yeah.
So,
I thought there was, but.
So let me just say that I'm sorry. We struggle a bit influencing the state benefits. As you can understand, while we are a significant employer here in Ithaca on the state plethora of benefits, we're a fairly small employer, so we have a more difficult time influencing those benefits. But I will take a look to see what there is in the vision coverage area.
For those in the endowed, I hope everyone's aware that I just checked that I have that little card in my pocket on the endowed side. So we'll look into this and also talk to the folks who help us interact with the state in this regard. I want to thank everybody. Please, before we go, if there are other issues, either something you're going to follow up by writing me or something you would like to comment on, maybe didn't feel comfortable doing it in this setting, please write to me. Most importantly, thank you very much. Peace.